We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From brand new Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, it's been a while. You've been lounging on the Bahama beachfront. We've all given thanks. The Tar Heels, I'd say pretty successful Thanksgiving weekend in total. And here we are again on the Carolina Insider. What up?
I was homesick for the pod. Like, you know, you need mom's apple pie,
yeah,
and a turkey and a pod. And I only had, well, none of those things, really. So it could have been that I was homesick for something else, yeah, but I chose to believe I was homesick for the pod.
Nor did you have electricity or water.
Nah, not all the time.
Other than that, everything's fine.
That's just part of the fun of these holiday tournaments.
So, man, we have a lot to talk about, clearly. The Tar Heels go 2-1 in the battle for Atlantis. And I know, again, as we said, Tar Heels going down there to win a championship. I think 2-1 is not bad. We're going to talk about that. Carolina, on the football side of things, wakes up at halftime after a not very pleasant first half, trailing 10-6 at the break against NC State, and then absolutely obliterates the pack in the second half. 35-0, including 28-0 in the third quarter. Tar Heels win 41-10. Bowl eligible. We'll talk about all of that. I put in my all-ACC votes for football. We'll talk about who I voted for, who Adam thought about voting for, but he doesn't have the ability to do so.
I did a mock ballot.
Yeah. And Adam, we are going to have, you know, we have our champion watch brought to you by UNC Healthcare normally. We're going to have champions in our midst right here in studio. Tar Heel field hockey, national champions yet again, back-to-back titles. We have the Hall of Fame head coach, Karen Shelton, who's just becoming a regular thing that she joins us once a year after taking home undefeated seasons and national titles. And Aaron Mattson, the player of the year in the ACC, the MVP of the NCAA tournament for the Tar Heels. Quite honestly, one of the very best field hockey players in the nation.
In the world.
On Team USA, on the Tar Heels. She and Coach Shelton in studio with us today.
That's a podcast.
That's what we have for you. Plus, Adam has a vacation from life, which really Adam's whole life is. Just yeah, a vacay. And much, much more. Adam, let's start with basketball. You were there, boots on the ground, Adam, in the Bahamas. So I'm going to let you speak to what you think you saw from Carolina in the battle for Atlantis. I was back in our studio, obviously watching everything, and we'll give some opinions too, but you were there. What you got?
Well, I think the first two games weren't much different than what you would expect. I think Carolina is better than Alabama, and they beat Alabama. And I think Michigan on that day at this point in the season is probably better than Carolina and has the right pieces to give Carolina trouble, most importantly. And it was just one of those November games that Carolina loses from time to time. So then I think your swing game becomes the Ducks. Because if you lose that game, everybody's all mad.
Oh, yeah.
But if you win that game, it's almost like the Michigan game never happened because you get a top 15 win over a good team and things seem all right. But I got to tell you, Jones, the mood going into that Oregon game in Tar Heel basketball land was below average. It didn't feel like Carolina, of course, hadn't played well against Michigan. That 19-0 run, I think that's one of the worst stretches of the Roy Williams era. Everything bad happened in those few minutes. So people were concerned about that. Garrison Brooks got hit in the eye, and his eye looked terrible.
Really did. What a tough little jerk he is. Mr. Pickle, you, sir, have earned your toughness card. There's no, I mean, think about Garrison Brooks in the last couple games going back to last year, got busted in the mouth against Washington, came back and played. I mean, when Coach Williams told the story of the fact that Garrison Brooks during the Michigan game, Coach Williams told him to go post up and he said, "Coach, I can't see the ball." That, I mean, but he was still out there playing defense and rebounding. Oh, Mr. Pickle.
George Lynch? Yeah. A little bit?
I was really impressed with Garrison Brooks.
Me too. And it was like there was never any doubt that he was going to play. Like, he was disgusted that anyone would ask him, even though his eye looked like he had just fought Ivan Drago.
Yeah.
So, concern about him. There was concern about Leaky Black, which turned out to be justified because he only played 8 minutes and some change. And things just didn't seem very positive. But that's when it's just like the whole NCAA tournament theory that if there's a second or third round matchup that everyone is talking about, that game will not occur. If there's a game that everyone is convinced Carolina is going to get smoked by 20, watch out, the Tar Heels are probably going to win. If it feels like everything's going bad, they're probably going to win. And that's what happened. Somehow, and in all honesty, did Carolina really play that well against Oregon? They're pretty good, but they didn't solve all the problems that you thought they had. They just figured out a way to make the right plays at the right time, defend at the right time, and win the game somehow against a good team.
I thought the Michigan game was your worst fears about this team coming true of, you know, they just, yeah, the offensive deficiencies just too big to overcome. Freshmen looking like freshmen when they played against older guys. Couldn't make shots from the outside. Not good, you know, not good. And transition defense, I think, still something that even coming out of Oregon, something the Tar Heels need to improve on. And so you left that Michigan game just going, oh boy. Especially with what you had coming up. Not just Oregon, but the next five games. Of going, man, oh, man. And so then, I think what the Oregon game did, Adam, is it showed you how I think Carolina is going to have to beat better teams this year. They're going to have to be good defensively. They have to be. Because they can't score enough to the level that Carolina normally scores. Maybe they get there later in the year. Right now, they're not there. They've got to play good defense. And the 12 block shots were big time, obviously. 6 by Baycott, 3 by Brooks, so 9 of the 12 by those two guys. Who, again, we've said, that's an impressive duo when they're playing well. And we'll talk about Baycott. He was obviously a beast in the game. They've got to make free throws. And this has not shown to be a very good free throw shooting team, but they were great in that game. And I think free throws will be even more important for this team than a normal quote-unquote team because it's an easy way to score points. And Carolina needs any easy way it can to score points. And then the other part of that, Adam, is I thought it was, I'll just say, interesting that Roy Williams very clearly told his team to slow it down because they needed to, because they needed a lower possession game, and they may have to do that some. And that's okay. And it was interesting to listen to Eric in particular, just because Eric and Dave doing the play-by-play. It was, Eric was getting all bothered that the Tar Heels weren't doing anything offensively, but I think that's what they had to do to win the game, is they had to slow it way down, and that's okay. Now, they need to make those possessions pay off at a higher rate than they did when they slowed it down, but they were able to do that effectively enough. And the final part is they hit, I thought Brandon Robinson's three to go make it from 5-8. The only three Carolina made in the second half was a really big shot. Very clearly, there was no doubt who was getting the ball when Oregon had cut it down to one in the final minute, and Cole Anthony made a big shot with a great screen that cleared out the way by Garrison Brooks, our boy, and stepped up to the line and hit four huge free throws. Brandon Robinson stepped to the line when you thought Carolina had the game, but he still needed to make the free throws, and he did. So, defense, important shots at important times, maybe slowing things down a little bit and making some free throws, I think, is the recipe, at least right now, against good teams for the Tar Heels.
Yes. And all those things were not really present the prior day. How does a team shoot 50% from the free throw line one day and then come back and shoot 95%? Same guys.
If I'm not mistaken, Adam, Tar Heel Sports Network statistician extraordinaire Jody Zeugner, I'm going to go back and look through my text here. I am pretty sure, because Jody was, even when Jody's not on right. GameSite, he's still firing off stats to the broadcast crew.
He's still inside the matrix of statistical knowledge.
Right. I got to double check and find it. I am pretty sure he sent us one that said the free throw percentage by Carolina was, you know, at some point in time with these other games as far as times that they had only missed one in this level, and it was the best ever following a game in which they had shot that low. Because you're right. You just don't see a team go 10 of 20 one day and then 20 of 21 the next day. That's wild. Same guys.
I thought in addition to the big performances from the folks we've already mentioned, it was one of those games where everyone who comes in needs to do something to help, and everyone did. They weren't spectacular. KJ Smith wasn't spectacular, but he didn't ruin things either. He managed the team for a long stretch when Cole Anthony had to sit on the bench with four fouls because everyone had fouls, and that was helpful. Justin Pearson, Christian Keeling did a few nice things. They weren't spectacular, but they did the things Carolina needed to win. And those are the more fun kinds of wins, I think, when everybody does something.
I don't think the Tar Heels are magically a lot better than they were the day before. But I do think it gives you this excitement that this team can figure some stuff out. Not just can they get better. We know they're going to get better. But that they showed that they were tough enough in a tough situation when they were battling fouls and battling injuries. They were tough enough to figure out a way to make it happen. And you know Coach Williams loved that. You know he did. And so is this team dramatically different coming out of this event than we thought it was? No, I don't think so. I think it's a team that is going to continue to get better. It's a team that has some potential to do some exciting things. It's a team that has some flaws that they'll have to continue to work on. But the part we didn't know was the part we saw against Oregon, and that is it was hit right in the face from the result the day before, the game situation of what was happening against Oregon, and it answered the bell and got a big win. I thought it was I get that it's the end of November, and as you and I have said, you can't harp on the results in November and act like that's going to be your whole season. I did feel like it was an impactful win for this team due to the quality of opponent, because Oregon's going to challenge for the Pac-12. I mean, it's Oregon, Arizona, and the Pac-12. Although Stanford's pretty good, too. What up, Jared Haas? Quality opponent, quick turnaround, things were going wrong, and they figured it out.
I think it also served to remind you that there are going to be some games like all of these games this season, and Carolina, more so than in past years maybe, is prone to some ups and downs. Because when you're so dependent on freshmen, and Carolina is very, very dependent on Cole Anthony and Armando Bacot, Bacot's going to have games like he did Thursday against John Teske, a big old senior who's all wily and crafty and doing his dumb hook shots and stuff. And
by the way, credit to that dude, because he's gotten a lot better. I mean, he's gotten
a lot better.
I mean, every year he's been there, because Carolina's seen Michigan a bunch here recently, and he's just gotten better every single year.
A lot better. There's going to be days where you run into that guy and you just look like a freshman against a senior. But then there are going to be days like the next day, too, where Bacot made Oregon's big guys look like they didn't know what they were doing. They missed a bunch of layups, partly because he was blocking half of them.
Adam, Armando Bacot put up 23 points, 12 rebounds, 7 of which were offensive, and blocked 6 shots. What a performance. And I mean, and the play where he got the dunk on the bounce pass from KJ Smith, he blocked the shot on one end. And then he beat everybody down the floor and got the dunk. The potential of Armando Bacot, he is in the exact right place. The combination of his skill set and the way Coach Williams likes to play, it's a marriage made in heaven, because Armando Bacot, if he stays healthy, has the potential to have an unbelievable Carolina career, whether it's 1 year or 4 years. He has a chance to be great.
Well, and Carolina's the hot point guard school right now, it seems like, partially because of what Coby White did last year. I think Bacot's got a chance to be this year's Coby White in a different way, in that he's going to be the guy who comes to Carolina, and he was a highly touted recruit. It's not like nobody had ever heard of him. He was about as touted as Coby White. And he's going to have the kind of Coby White-ish year that's going to make other big guys go, wait a minute, so I could go there and do that? It seems like they really know what to do with their big guys, because he's that guy who's gone to other schools sometimes in the past, and you sit there and watch him and go, man, if that guy had gone to Carolina, he would have been great. Well, Armando Bacot did go to Carolina, and it looks like he is going to be great.
Cole Anthony, the shooting numbers, Adam, have not been as good as the Notre Dame game, which I don't know if anybody thought they were going to be. They had dipped, and they're starting to come back up a little bit. It seems like he is being a little smarter with his shots. And I do think you can't teach what he did in the last minute, which was he wanted the ball. He didn't care that he was at the free throw line. Cole Anthony seems to be a really good free throw shooter when it's on the line. And then when he's kind of interested in the free throws, maybe not quite as good. But he's a dude who wants the ball when it matters. And I don't know if you're Carolina, you would want anybody else with the ball in their hands in that moment.
And it didn't matter that Oregon knew he was going to get it.
Right.
That's fine. You're going to put every defensive focus you have on Cole Anthony? That's all right. He'll just get to the basket anyway. It's fine. And then I think the only thing that, I don't know if concerning is the right word, but the one area he can improve upon, I think, after this week, is just kind of his outward attitude towards things. He's going to get some similar calls to what he got in the Bahamas in ACC play. But the difference is, you're going to see those officials every week almost. And they're going to remember if every time the whistle blows, you throw your hands up and are got your frowny face on. And I think Roy Williams has made this same point to Anthony, both on the floor and in practice and in private between the two of them. People are watching him all the time. And it doesn't take very long to get a reputation as someone who doesn't like it when things don't go their way. And he's a college freshman. That's how college freshmen act. But he's much better than a college freshman in every other way. So if you had to pick one area where that's one spot where I think you could be a little better, I think that's it for him, because you don't want him to get into January and February and all of a sudden the ACC officials who see him all the time start the game thinking, oh, he's going to complain every time, because then the whistles get a little tighter and the rope gets a little shorter. And you don't want that for him. He's too good for that.
One last individual, Adam. Brandon Robinson returned and made a difference for Carolina, I thought. I mean, I think his threat from the outside, and was he lights out from three? No. But did he make some? Yes. Is he shooting with confidence? Yes. And I think he has to. He's got to be that guy for Carolina this year. He made three threes against Oregon in seven attempts. Not a terrible percentage. I mean, if he could do that-ish type of shooting, I think that's really helpful for Carolina.
I would love to see his percentage on when the ball goes inside and then comes back out to him as compared to when
swinging
he
around
dribbles
a
couple times and jacks it up. I don't have the numbers, but I bet you there's a stark difference. And I think as this team figures out, again, where's the best place to help their teammates score, I think his the amount of shots he gets when it goes in and comes out will go up, and the amount of times he feels like, I need to take a shot right now, will go down. And that'll make Carolina a better team, and that'll make him a more important piece.
So, again, I just thought a really big win, a productive tournament for Carolina in that it took – I think it learned some more negative things that it can improve on. I think it showed some good things that give you some really excitement about the future and about this season. And did the Tar Heels want to win the championship? Yes. But do I think they got something out of this event? Yes. And that Oregon game was such a big swing game, because if you go 1-2 – you lose to the best two opponents you play, it's you leave there not feeling great. But I think you leave there feeling okay, understanding that there's still a lot of steps that need to be taken, but that you're doing okay right now.
And unfortunately, those steps are going to be against very difficult opponents. Tomorrow night's opponent, Ohio State, one of the best defenses in the country.
Next two teams, Ohio State and Virginia, are both top five in the nation in defensive efficiency, which is not what you want to hear for the Tar Heels right now as they try to work through some of these offensive growing pains that they're having. And, man, this is one of those games where the atmosphere in the Smith Center could really help. I mean, this could be the home court could be a big part for Carolina in this game to try to rattle Ohio State a little bit. The Buckeyes are good, and it's going to be a big-time matchup.
Reminds you a little bit, potentially, of the other Ohio State game in the Big Ten Challenge, where there was such a good Smith Center crowd that really I do think made a difference. That was the Greg Oden Ohio State team, but Greg Oden didn't play. But that was such a really that was such a good game. This has the potential, and I know people are thinking, "Oh, 9:30? Do I want to go to that? That's late." It definitely is late. I'm 100% on board with you about that. But I do think this team especially feeds off of that kind of environment, and if it could be that one, I think that would help, because Ohio State's going to be tough to beat anywhere. They are good, legitimately good.
Anything else basketball-wise, Adam?
No.
How was the atmosphere around the team Bahamas-wise? Everybody have a good time? I mean,
I think so. As
we kind of joked about, there were some problems at Atlantis. They had a major power outage for a while. In fact, twice, I think, while you guys were there.
Yep.
But as far as other than those things?
I don't know if you know, but they're water slides. People always enjoy that. That tournament tries its best, bless its heart. Just PSA, a lot of times people always say, should I go to the Bahamas tournament or should I go to Maui? Because in people's minds, they're the same. If you really have to choose one of the two, you should go to Maui. It's the best of its kind.
Tar Heels will be there next year. Whether your favorite seat is courtside or upper level, head to StubHub. Grab 100% verified tickets. You know you will get in. After all, they've been hooking up fans with great seats for more. This is last year's copy item. This 18 years now. More than 18 years. Official fan-to-fan ticket marketplace at Carolina Athletics. StubHub, be there. Adam, let's talk football. You didn't have the dedication to go over to Raleigh on Saturday, but I did, Adam. And, man, what a great day for Carolina. The Tar Heels didn't play very well in the first half. Talked to both Mac Brown and Nick Polino on the radio afterwards, and both of them said the same thing, which I think is true. It was just you could tell Carolina wanted to do it so badly, and they knew what was on the line, and they knew who the opponent was. And as Brian said, Brian Simmons kind of talking about in postgame, he said, you start trying to win the game on every single play, and you just can't do that. And you could see, you know, the Tar Heels slid a bunch because it was rainy and cold and gross. And, you know, they had there was one Javonte Williams run where he tried to cut and there was a huge hole, and if he hits that hole, he's got a big run, but he slipped and fell. And you could tell just they were frustrated and things weren't going right the way they wanted them to go. And, you know, Sam Howell threw a bad pick out of the ordinary for him, and just threw a bad pick that then State took advantage of. Carolina busted in coverage and State hit their wide open guy. And so it was 10-6 at halftime, but it felt, you could feel that the momentum wasn't where you wanted it to be if you're the Tar Heels. And so to Carolina's credit, came out, got a quick stop defensively. Then the Tar Heels themselves had a quick three and out where they couldn't do anything. And then that's when things changed. That Don Chapman interception, the Chapman interception and then Javonte Williams back-to-back plays felt like it changed the game. And I think particularly the first play that Carolina had offensively after the pick. Sam Howell looked to his left, and Daz Newsome and De'Ami Brown were supposed to be doing something, and whatever they were supposed to be doing, they didn't do. Because they just stood there and kind of, I mean, literally stopped looking at and were just looking at each other. I've never seen anything quite like it. And Sam Howell looked over there, and then he was like, well, that's not supposed to be happening. So instead of freaking out, he turned and went to his outlet guy, to Javonte Williams, which, by the way, was a stud throw. It was a long throw on a rope right to Javonte Williams, who then just made a man miss and got a big gain right after that. Tar Heels used a little tempo, gave it right back to him, and he scored a touchdown on the next play. And then it just really snowballed the positive momentum for Carolina, the negative momentum for State. Carolina got another stop, scored, got a turnover, scored again. It was just downhill. And Carolina wasn't letting its foot off the gas either. They were hitting deep shots. They were running the ball. They were physical. And you could see, I don't like to use the term give up because I don't think anybody, you know, they're out there competing even if they are State and we don't like them as much as other teams. But you could tell Carolina was the team playing with confidence at that point, and the body language was different. And it was a complete domination in the second half. And Adam, honestly, you look at the stats. I didn't realize it until I mean, 620 yards for Carolina, 289 for NC State. It was a one-sided affair on Saturday night. It didn't quite get there on the scoreboard until the third quarter, but it was a one-sided affair for the game.
Well, and like you said, you don't want to say give up, but I do think as the third quarter progressed, both teams sort of moved into that realm of acceptance. State realized Carolina was better than them and was pummeling them and had them up against the rope and was just right in the chin. And Carolina was kind of realizing, we're a lot better than them. We can do pretty much what we want. And of course it helps when the other team keeps giving you the ball, or really you keep taking the ball from the other team. Jeremiah Gimmel, former pod guest. That was a nice play.
That Gimmel, that was a good play. He forced it and got it back. That was a big-time play.
It's so much harder than people think. Like, when you watch it on TV and see Jeremiah Gimmel tackle the guy, he's laying on the ground, there goes the ball, he just hops right up and then goes and jumps on the ball. That's harder to do than you think it is, because he makes it look easy. That game was everything Carolina football needed. You needed the win to be bowl eligible, but you needed to do it like that because of the history there and everything that you've kind of thought has been true. Like, as this football season has developed, you've thought, you know, I think Carolina's kind of on the up, and I'm not sure these other guys are on the up. Well, after you saw that game Saturday, you really feel that way, and that's what you needed, and that's just more. We've talked about giving Mac Brown ammunition on the recruiting trail. How much more can you give the guy? I mean, I bet some high school prospects are going to get some fun phone calls at a time that's legal, whenever that is, because I don't know the recruiting calendar. And it's going to be hard to resist what Mac Brown's telling them, because it looks like it's true.
Third quarter stats. Carolina had 219 yards, 136 passing, and 83 rushing. State had 43 yards, 22 passing, 21 rushing. Carolina had 12 first downs in the quarter. State had three. State had three turnovers in the quarter. Carolina had none, of course.
It's almost a first down every minute.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Second half, Sam Howell. 12 of 14, including hitting his last nine, 185 yards and two touchdowns. I'd say he responded okay to that poor pick late in the first half. Sam Howell's really, really good. And when you see other teams that are struggling at quarterback, and I mean, State is one of those, but it's not the only one, you realize how good he is and how different he is from most other quarterbacks at this level.
As a freshman.
Yeah. Adam, a couple of the numbers coming off of the game. First, Sam Howell, 401 yards in the game, just the 12th 400-plus yard performance passing in Carolina history. He is number one, as we know, in single-season touchdown passes with 35. He is sixth in completions and attempts single season at Carolina. Fourth in yards, with a great chance to move up to at least number two in the bowl game, because he only needs, it's less than 150 or right in that range or something to move up to number two. And second in passing efficiency as well in a season for Carolina. The record goes all the way back to 1974 on that one. Daz Newsome, Deami Brown, both with 947 yards, tied for eighth all-time at Carolina single season, have a great chance to go over 1,000, assuming they're healthy and play in the bowl game.
They've been good. Kind of under the radar good.
I voted both of them All-ACC. I voted Daz first team, Deami Brown second team. We can talk about that in a little bit. Michael Carter, close to 1,000 for the year, needs 81 yards in the bowl game for 1,000 yards as well. And Javonte Williams needs a little more than 100, I think. I don't have the stats right in front of me, but he's not that far off either for the potential for 1,000 for him too. So a lot of individual performances. Chad Surratt ended up tying for the ACC lead in tackles for the year. So a lot of individuals having good years as well. And as Roy Williams always says, Adam, the team that does the best, their individuals get the rewards and the awards. And I think that will come here this week for the Tar Heels some.
And almost all those individuals at least have the option of coming back next year.
Right.
God, I'm going to be pretty good.
In fact, we're going to just highlight all those guys as our champions of the gridiron, where we highlight MVPs from this past game and all season long, brought to you by UNC Healthcare, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds to help keep you in the game and at your very best. See their lineup, unchealthcare.org/sports. Adam, what else you got football-wise?
Good turnout by Tar Heel fans over in Raleigh.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, considering everything, like, it wasn't like there were 50,000 Tar Heel fans there.
Right.
But it was a 7 o'clock game on Thanksgiving weekend, and rainy and cold all day long, including at the game, and still people made the trip. That's the kind of thing Mac Brown's been asking for and talking about. So I thought that was good.
You know, I thought it was interesting in the locker room afterwards. They were excited to win the game, but they were much more excited about the bowl than anything else, about being qualified to play again and getting to go to a bowl game for the first time since 2016. For some of these guys, it's the first time they've gone. That was the big deal to them, much more so than beating State. And you want to beat State, don't get me wrong, but it was much bigger deal to them to go to a bowl. Mac Brown, as he was doing his dancing and all his fun stuff with the team, which, by the way, who could have ever imagined how positive that would be for Carolina? And now it's like this tradition where he picks players and they give him the move to do. And so he's like, all right, I can't remember who it was. Jahlil Taylor was one of the two this game. He's all right, Jahlil, give me my go-to move. And they show, and then they do it. I mean, but the traction that Carolina gets in a positive way socially and in that area for those things is remarkable. But Mac Brown, when he was talking to the team, he said, okay, you know, you've done this. Now let's go win this last game. He said, you know, let's have a winning season now. You've done this much. Let's take this final step to really cap this year off.
It's so fun to be the hot team and have all that positive momentum. And I just want to, we've talked about this before, but just want to remind people to enjoy it again, because you won't get to do a season like this again, because this year there were almost zero expectations.
Right, they'll be higher next year.
Next year, you're going to go into that season thinking, well, if Carolina doesn't win X games, I'm really going to be disappointed. You didn't have that this year, and that's why it was so fun. That's why that win was so fun. Remember, there came a point in Mac Brown 1.0 where you could beat teams 41-10 and people were mad.
Right, and that's what he said happened at Texas, essentially, is that it was, if they didn't go undefeated and win the national championship, that everybody was mad and he was mad. And so it will eventually be different. Even though you want to try to enjoy the process, it gets harder the better you get.
So enjoy this right now. Carolina is going to go to a bowl, and people are going to be happy no matter what bowl it is. Even if it's not the Tony the Tiger Bowl, which we know is the best bowl ever.
It's great.
And really, really rocks. Carolina's going to go to a bowl. Everybody's going to love it. They're going to have fun. People are going to go. And that's a fun year to have that you need to enjoy while we're having it, because as soon as that bowl game is over, the expectations go up for 2020.
I do think, Adam, that along with a couple of the results, Pittsburgh losing, Louisville losing, I do think that hot team mantra that you used is going to help Carolina get into a decent bowl game. Now, we may be proven totally incorrect. We won't know until after this upcoming weekend, but it feels like the combination of the Tar Heels have had a tough past couple of years, clearly had a better season this year, ending with two pretty convincing wins. Granted, Mercer and NC State were the best two teams that Carolina played all year, but two convincing wins. You had that game against Clemson that nationally people remember. And quite honestly, you've got Mack Brown, and Mack Brown is a national name. He's somebody that college football fans know. He is a story in and of himself, coming back and having success. He knows all the people at ESPN because he's been there the last 5 years and they all love him. I do think all that stuff, along with Carolina just being the Tar Heels and having a national name, I do think, and again, we'll knock on wood, hopefully this gets Carolina to at least a semi-attractive game for a 6-6 team.
Carolina's got all the assets that you look for in a bowl game that's not the college football playoff, which is based purely on who are the four best teams. Everything else is based on all those things you just said and a whole bunch of variables that people will complain about. Oh, this shouldn't matter, that shouldn't matter. It does. It does. They're all ESPN programming. That's what they're for. And they're a reward for a good season. Carolina's got all the assets to make them very attractive. And I really do think, I think they'll go somewhere nice and have a chance to really have a fun end of the year and start to 2020.
The practices that Carolina will get are the biggest deal, according to Coach Brown. I think we talked about that on the last one. He said just to get the reps for the younger players is enormous. That's normally how these bowl, like Aaron Crawford isn't going to be out there grinding through the first half of these bowl practices. It'll mostly be the younger guys, get them a lot of time on the field. Brian Simmons talked about how they would sometimes have a scrimmage or something in the middle portion of the bowl practices for the younger guys to play a game-like scenario. Mack Brown said he and his staff had to sit down starting Sunday, and they were going to plan it all out and figure out the best way to attack this next month. 3 to 4 weeks, I guess, as the Tar Heels prepare for wherever they're heading in the postseason. And again, we find that out Sunday. Right, Adam?
That's the official word.
Right.
Perhaps something will trickle out before then.
But so they've got to – you got to figure out the four in the college football playoff first, because right, then everything else is adjusted off of that. Clearly, Clemson will be in the college football playoff if the Tigers beat Virginia. Virginia's playing great right now. Clemson is heavily favored, as it should be, so we'll see. What I thought we could do, Adam, let's go to our interview. We'll do that, come out, talk a little bit about all ACC football-wise, which some of those teams, I think, came out today, Tuesday. If not, they're coming out tomorrow, soon. And we'll talk about that. Adam's got a list, some other stuff. But right now, Karen Shelton, Aaron Mattson, both national champions. Aaron Mattson's never lost a match in college. She's 46-0. No big deal. So we're going to talk to them about this most recent field hockey national title for the Tar Heels. Come back, and we have a lot more to do here on the Carolina Insider.
You know that we like to have on national champions. Very rarely do we get to have on as freshly minted national champions
That's right.
as we do today. Carolina's most recent national champions, and there have been a lot, but the most recent ones are here with us today. Head coach Karen Shelton of the Carolina field hockey team, undefeated 2 years in a row now, 46 wins in a row.
That's right.
Whew. And Aaron Mattson, what an incredible year you both just had. What? When did you realize there was the chance that this team could be as good as it was?
Well, I think this year for this particular team, it took us a little bit longer than the previous year. And we had been in some tight games early on. But it was the Princeton game here at home, I think, that we were down two goals going into the fourth quarter and scored three within 5 minutes in order to win the game in regulation. And I think at that point in time, we all kind of looked at each other and realized that we had, you know, the makings of what it takes to win a national championship.
Aaron, how about you from the player perspective? How did you kind of see it play out in that way?
Yeah, I agree with Coach completely. I think last year we came in with that confidence starting in the first game, and this year it took us a little more time to kind of gain that and believe in ourselves. And I think that game, once we came back and saw what we could do and believed in all of each other and everything, and I think in the last, I think, what was it, 5 minutes?
5 minutes.
We kind of realized what we could do and that we can just take it one game at a time but go all the way.
So you don't even know what it's like to lose at the college level, huh? It's like, well, you don't even know what happens if you don't win, right?
No. I'm lucky to say that, but no.
What has made these two teams so special? I mean, not just winning the championship, which is obviously your ultimate goal, but undefeated both times. As somebody who's been out there doing it, what has allowed this team to make that happen?
It's actually funny you asked that. Last night, we were all hanging out, a couple of us, and we were talking about how we're going to be at each other's weddings and how we'll know each other's kids, and it's beyond the games, it's beyond the trophies and the titles and everything, and I think that's what set us apart is just both years, and we're going to try to continue it, obviously, but we just had that family and sister atmosphere where everybody felt comfortable. There was no sort of class system, no freshman had to be afraid or have that intimidation at all, and I think it allowed for everybody to just relax and play the game we love together.
Coach, how'd you build it to this point? I mean, you guys have always been successful, of course, but 46 in a row, back-to-back championships. How'd you get it to this point?
You know, it's trying to consistently do the right things, to recruit the right kind of players, and to just develop healthy winning habits. I mean, that's been the trademark of our program. We believe in passing the ball. We believe in playing team defense. And I think, though, what's helped us, and Aaron alluded to it, is the team chemistry. And mm-hmm. I credit Dr. Jenny Shannon, who has been working with our team over the last 4 years. We devote 30 minutes each week, both spring season and fall season, to meeting with her. And the open and honest communication and the togetherness, the focus of the mission, so to speak, that we're all on the same page, has been outstanding, and it's just brought us all together and really focused.
We talked about this with Heather O'Reilly a couple months ago. When you're part of a team that is clearly the best team and is the team that everyone wants to beat, but that you also, you know, when you walk out on the field, you are better than some of the opponents you play. How do you maintain the edge, and in y'all's case, not just for a season, but for two seasons?
Well, Coach makes sure that we all respect our opponents and, you know, the whole ordeal. And we do. We really do. We treat every game like it's a team who wants to come out and beat us into the ground, and they do. But I think we're different in the sense that as a team, we enjoy that, and we like being that team that everybody wants to beat because it makes other teams play better against us. We play better because of that. It's just the intensity and everything, and obviously we don't want to change that, but I mean, it starts with preparing for each team equally and holding them to a high standard and respecting them.
How about from your perspective, Coach?
I think we talk about the next game. You know, you're only as good as your next one. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the players understand and respect the fact that we will take everybody's best shot, and that there are no supposed tos. You're not, you know, we're supposed to win. No, it's when the whistle blows, it's what happens next. And so just kind of understanding and respecting that the game itself is difficult. Our game requires a lot of skill and speed and stamina and, you know, precision. And so you have got to execute on that day and against that opponent who really wants to win. And so I just think that our kids have done a nice job of understanding that and not looking ahead and just wanting to get out there. And I think one of the things that I've admired about these last two seasons and these teams is the fact that they love to play. And so winning and scoring, you know, special goals is something to be celebrated and enjoyed. And we have fun with the game. And I think that's important.
You guys, at least, and again, I am not a field hockey expert, but in watching some games, particularly late in the season, you guys seem so much more aggressive offensively than your opponent. Is that a part of what you are trying to do to consistently put pressure on them with your offensive aggression?
Well, I think in this particular year, simply because we lost our whole defensive backfield, we lost National Player of the Year Ashley Hoffman,
right.
and then Cassie Sumfest went down with an injury, and so you know, three new backfield players. So typically we start from the back always, and then this year we had to grow from the back, and so you know, early on we needed to score more goals, and we did grow and develop as a young defense, but we also have a special player, you know, Aaron Mattson, who not only can score goals but is the best passer in the country as well, led the team in both goals and assists. So she's you know, a threat offensively, draws a crowd, but then she can find the open player and assist the goals. So we are a strong offensive team, and we're growing as a defensive team.
Aaron, when did you realize that you were a lot better at field hockey than just like, hey, I'm good out in the neighborhood? Like, you were good on a much bigger level.
I don't know. There's not a time, and I don't tend to think about that, honestly. And I look at people here who obviously challenge me, people overseas who challenge me, and there's not like a limit in my mind, and I always want to continue to keep getting better. So I wouldn't say there was a specific time that I realized it, but I mean, coach teaches me every single day. Rob, Grant, our entire coaching staff, the players on the field, we all coach each other, and I think it's something to be said, which is another thing about our team, is that we just want to keep learning, and it comes from us too. So it's just a good atmosphere where I can continue to grow and learn as a player.
Why was this a sport you were interested in, Aaron? Because it's not a huge national sport yet. I know that's something we talked to you, Coach, about last year, is about continuing to grow the game on a national level. But why was this one that interested you?
My mom played in college for a year. She went to Yale. She was a goalie, though, so... Mm. I'm on the opposite side of the field as her, but...
Do you ever, like, shoot against her, like,
no.
At Thanksgiving or anything like that? Yeah, in the backyard.
She hasn't suited up, no, but I don't know. I picked up a stick when I was really young. I remember going to a camp, and I was six, and it was on grass, and the grass was terrible, but I loved it, and I had fun, and I played softball for a little while. I played basketball. I never played soccer, but... and I think it was around middle school where I just wanted to continue with this, and... I remember I have like a room in my basement where it's just like concrete, and that's where I do my stick skills because it's fast and everything. And I have a poster from the London Olympics of like Melissa Gonzalez, Michelle Batiste. And I remember looking up to them and just being like, I want to get there one day. So I think that's where it all started.
And you have gotten there. You play for Team USA as well. What is that experience like?
It's amazing. I'm super lucky. And with me going away for three games this season, it helped everyone. So it helps me, it helps the team. I can better my abilities. I learn from even better players, the best in the country. And obviously international competition, you can't compare it. But yeah, I mean, we don't have the Olympics this upcoming summer, sadly, but hopefully 2024, we're looking at that, and 2028. So it'll be exciting.
Coach, when did you realize in the recruiting process or whenever it was that you were looking at somebody pretty special here in Aaron?
Well, I was a bit lucky. My niece, Laura, played field hockey, and you know, so I was up to see her play a little bit. And my brother said, there's this young player. I think she was 8 years old, nine maybe.
Goodness gracious.
You've got to see this kid. And so, yeah, I went and watched Aaron play. And you know, you could tell at that age that she had something special. And, of course, she's you know, worked really hard to get to where she is now. And so she just loves it and is going to continue and do the best that she can to become one of the best in the world.
I know this is tough because y'all are both sitting here and you still have to coach each other and play for each other. But what, Coach Shelton, do you think separates Aaron from the very best? And Aaron, what do you think separates Coach Shelton from the very best in terms of coaching?
We'll all start because, Aaron, she's got speed and skill and vision and game sense. I mean, just an absolute complete player. I've never coached anyone quite like her. And again, the humility is important, the work ethic. She's growing as a human being, as a young woman. It's fun to watch her blossom, not only as a player, but as a person. But she hasn't reached the ceiling yet, and so that's fun to try and to know that we can help her get even better. So it's fun.
I think with Coach, it's just as special, and we've had a special relationship for a very long time. But I think what she does that I know that a lot of coaches do not is she treats each player based on their skill set, their personality, what they need, and takes into account everything for that player. So with some, she can yell at you. With others, she needs to talk to you. You know, she does it so the player can gain whatever she needs to. And I think it's also the off the field part that's special, where she's also like a mother to all of us, and she has 30 kids running around, and we can go to her and laugh and joke and be silly and everything and sit and talk about non-field hockey topics. But then when we're on the field, she holds us to high standards. So we know we want to play for her, play for Carolina, play for ourselves. And it's really something that you can't just get anywhere.
Aaron, you guys played Boston College 3 times this year, right? Regular season, ACC yep. championship, and national semifinals.
Yes.
I remember the ACC championship. It got a little aggressive during that game. When you see somebody that many times, does it get a little chippy out there when you play somebody that many times?
It does. It definitely was an aggressive game. I think it's one of the more aggressive this season, but it's part of the game, and knowing how to handle it and play against it is something that our team did well, I think. And I, like I said earlier, it's nice to know that you're the team that they do that against, because it means they want it that much more against you, and then it makes you step your game up as well.
Coach, take us through the championship game. You mentioned Princeton. They'd given you maybe as big a scare as anybody has during this past season. What was the game plan? What was the thought process as you're going into that title game?
Well, they played a completely different style than us. Very direct, very fast, and they got the ball to their front runners, and they just attacked the sides and attacked the circle with speed. So it's a little bit different for us to handle. And of course, we wanted a quick start, and they came out of the chute and scored on us early. And I was a tad nervous about our young defense and how they'd handle the pressure of the national championship game. But, I think getting poked early like that was good for us. And it had happened in the semifinal as well, where Boston College scored on us early. And I think it just, not woke us up, because we were awake, but it just made us more focused. And we knew we had plenty of time to come back. I do think that Princeton is a very, very strong team, and they threatened us with their front running. They earned corners. They got shots against us. And I think at one point they had a couple of point blankers when we were down 1-0. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have to go down 2-0, but we almost did. but I think once we got the first one, and the first one was huge, Reese Creator off of Kat Hayden delivered this ball to the circle. She got a shot, played the rebound off the goalie's pads, and that was right at the end of the first quarter, and that was huge. And I said to Aaron and Reese in that timeout, I'm like, that goalie is – I didn't say this exactly, but shaking in her boots. So get hard shots on target, and of course, we did so.
Aaron, what'd she say? Just kidding. So Aaron has been very nice and isn't like walking around with a shirt that says I'm one of the best in the world at field hockey, which is what I would do
right.
If I was the best in the world at anything. We've asked a couple other just Carolina student athletes and other sports this, and I wondered what you think. What's it like to be at Carolina when you're one of the very best in the world at what you do, but then there's also other people here who are some of the very best in the world at what they do? What does that do for you?
It's amazing, and it's that athlete culture that we love, and all of our teams support each other, and we all follow each other on Instagram, repost for each other, go to our games, and it's amazing, and we know that everyone has each other's backs, and I think being able to watch high-class athletes, not just in college, but athletes that could even go beyond that, is really something special, and we definitely don't take it for granted, yeah.
Can I go back to when Coach said that she saw you when you were 8 or 9 and like knew that you were different? How do you know an 8 or 9 year old is different?
Well, she was.
She just knew.
Stood out, was at a level that the rest of the kids were not at.
Right.
And, you know, my brother was really cool. And he had met Brian, Aaron's dad, and mom, Jill. And they said, walk me over, and we shook hands. And, of course, it was totally legal because, you know, she was below the...
I don't think you can illegally recruit an 8-year-old, as best I know.
But, yeah, no, and it was in an old smelly gym. Do you remember that gym? And so, yeah, no, the rest is kind of history. We stayed in touch, and Aaron came to camp, and I just think she's always loved Carolina, and I'm grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Coach said, Aaron, that... you guys take pride in your passing, that you want to be a good passing team. Mm-hmm. Is that a hard culture to embrace?
Not at all.
To be one that wants to pass?
No, I love it. I grew up on it, and luckily my club team, WC Eagles, was also a passing club, passing teams. All of my teams have enforced that, and I think that's what sets teams apart. And you can be a great dribbler, a great shooter, a great scorer, everything, but you need the ball, and you need the ball to do the work, and I think Coach enforcing that on us really helps our team. And we have days where it doesn't go too well, but we know that deep down it's in our blood, and that's what our focus is every single game.
Have you found that to be an easy culture to instill?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it is one of my things. You know, we are a passing team, and it was fun this year, just after winning the championship, have all the other coaches, you know, at this recruiting event I was just at, say, we loved watching your team. Your team passed the ball so well. It was so fun to watch. You know, and that makes me feel good. Not just that we won, but that we won in an entertaining and effective manner.
Mm-hmm.
Unselfish, look, you know, try and move the ball. First simple pass you see, just keep it moving. And I think the team embraced it.
Coach, what challenges you now? You've won all these national titles. You guys won your last 46 matches in a row. You've got the stadium named after you that you guys play in every game. What challenges you?
Listen, I love to bring some kind of credit and distinction to Carolina. That's what drives me. It always has. You know, and I just love this university. As I didn't have the privilege of going to school here, and I came in 81, and you know, I remember feeling like a Yankee, you know, because I came from Pennsylvania, and back then, you know, I remember wearing red one day, and Francis Hogan said to me, "You're looking mighty statey today." And so I quickly learned the culture, and, you know, I do bleed blue, and I love this place, and I've just been so lucky to be the head coach here and to have had success and hopefully continued success.
Of all the honors you've had, I'm pretty sure one of the biggest ones is y'all are the first two multi-person interviews here in Pod World headquarters.
Yeah.
First ever. We've only been in here a month or so. Yeah, I mean, go ahead and celebrate. I'll give you a minute. Now, as you can see, we have some items from some various teams around. And I believe Jones has said on the air, what would be really cool is if we had a field hockey stick.
Yeah.
Or something from field hockey. Is there any chance we can get something from field hockey to put here in luxurious headquarters?
We waited to get you guys on the mic so that we knew that.
There's really no way you can say no.
There's no way we would say no. And consider it done. Harrow is Cat Hayden's dad owns Harrow, and last year he developed and produced some commemorative sticks.
Yes.
Wow.
So I'm assuming that they're being produced right
yes.
now.
Yes.
We'll all have one. So I'll work on it. I'll give Mark a call, and yeah.
Awesome.
Get it here as quick as we can.
Aaron, okay. I know this is going to be a surprise. I've never played field hockey. Okay. What would you tell someone who's never played field hockey and they watch you guys play and they go, "Hey, what's going on?" What would you say is something unique about the sport, challenging about the sport that somebody who's never seen it or played it just wouldn't be able to understand?
I've never been asked that before.
Oh yeah.
No,
hey, now you and I can fist bump. There we go.
I don't know. It's funny to bring our baseball friends and our lacrosse friends and everybody who's never picked up a stick just like you down to the field, and we bring the sticks out and the ball buckets, and they pick it up and they just can't do it.
Yeah.
And I get so frustrated with them because I'm like, it's not that hard, but
right.
It is. It really is. And it's crazy to think that something that looks so simple could be so difficult. And I think every sport has that aspect to it that everybody doesn't really think about. But I don't know. There's so many things that are fun that you can do with the ball and the stick. I think for me, it was always just making sure my fundamentals were perfected so I could move on to the next thing. But we tried reverse hits and we do 3D dribbling and we do even just like pulls as fast as you can. And it's crazy to just feel that feeling when you get something and then can move on and make it harder and do it better the next time and share it with everybody around you.
Adam, I'm just saying, if they are generous enough to let us have a stick, maybe you and I need to go out there and get a quick lesson from Aaron to figure out how to do it.
No, that's not it. What I was wondering is, what time can Aaron be at Karen Shelton Stadium with a bucket of balls and her mom's goalie pads for Jones to wear and take about 100 shots right at Jones when he's standing in the net? What time can we make that happen?
I would love
for you to also.
I'll absolutely do it. I think that'd be fun.
You will stand in the goal while Aaron Mattson shoots at you.
I will.
I will not.
We can arrange something maybe not as dangerous.
That's aggressive.
For everybody.
All right, before we let y'all go, and I'm serious. I'm fine doing that. I want to do that.
Okay. I want you to.
Aaron, what's next for you? I know obviously class-wise we're getting into the end of the semester, but field hockey-wise, what's next for you?
Well, like I said, we don't have the Olympics this summer, so that was kind of a switch in my whole life plans,
right?
But I think for me right now it is focusing on school, and obviously the U.S. team isn't going anywhere and I'm not going anywhere, and that will always hold a special place in my heart. I'll always be a part of the team, and right now I don't know if I can say what's next for me just because I don't know what's next for the program yet. But yeah, for now it's finals, sadly, and focusing on that, finishing strong, and continuing just to keep my training up until I know for sure what's going on.
Thank you guys both for being with us. We really appreciate the time. Coach Shelton's already signed our big board. Aaron, we got to get you to sign our board. Right. We're only 3 years behind in getting everybody who's been on to sign it, but we need the signature. And Adam, are we going to work it out?
It sounds like it to me.
All right, we're going to work it out. And we will get a video out there.
Oh, we sure will.
And
don't
I will
you worry
take,
about that.
And I will make some slick saves.
Well, I gotta see.
Thank you guys. Oh, wait.
Out of 100, out of 10 shots, how many will Jen stop? You're taking the shots.
Am I being okay?
You're being at least like 50% of Aaron Mattson.
Okay, I'll give him five.
He's gonna stop five.
I'm gonna.
Coach Shelton's like, there's no way.
I was going to be happy with two.
I was going to say, if he got one, that would be a celebratory thing.
Yeah, oh yeah. If I stop one, we may just
have to
stop the exercise.
Maybe it's also, but no.
In order to get you out there, she's got to say, oh, you're going to stop five. Then you're going to get out there.
Thank you guys again for joining us. Congratulations on all your success, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Did you know? And I bet you are on the road a bunch during this Thanksgiving holiday. That texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At highway speeds, that's like driving the length of an entire football field with your eyes closed. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina urge you to stay safe behind the wheel. No need to text and drive. TrustedChoice.com/GoHeels will help you find an independent insurance agent near you. All ACC. Oh, by the way, Adam, I felt a little sheepish during the state game because on one of the touchdown calls, I used the choo-choo that we normally reserve.
I heard that.
But you know why, though? It really was. Carl Tucker, it was one of those kind of counter plays, and Javonte Williams scored it, but Carl Tucker was right in front of him. I mean, you could just see it happening. Carl blew somebody up. It was awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Third quarter.
I thought maybe you were going to say that on one of the touchdowns, somebody was butt naked and you went ahead and said that he was.
Not yet. Saving that for Andrew Playtech sometime. All ACC, Adam. Okay. So this is how I voted it from the Tar Heel perspective. I went Sam Howell, second team at quarterback. I went Bryce Perkins, first team. I think Sam Howell is a better quarterback in the purest sense than Bryce Perkins. I think Trevor Lawrence is a better quarterback. But Bryce Perkins has put Virginia on his back. The combination of his passing and running he dominated. The two highest total offense games for an individual this year belong to Perkins in the two games that won them the division, beating Carolina and Virginia Tech. And so I picked Perkins as first team and the offensive player of the year in the league. I had Howell second team, Lawrence third team. And I'm sure those three, I mean, I can't imagine anybody that other than those three are going to be the three mentioned. I picked Howell the offensive rookie of the year and then the overall rookie of the year. Because what you do is you pick your offensive player, your defensive player, then your total player. And I did pick Perkins as player of the year. And then offensive rookie of the year, defensive rookie of the year, and your overall rookie of the year. And I picked Howell. I had Michael Carter and Javonte Williams together on third team running back. You picked six total, two for each team. And I think both of them have a good chance to be in the mix somewhere. They're in looking at the total numbers in the conference, they're both right up there. And so I picked both of those guys together on third team. I had Daz, as I said earlier, Daz Newsome first team as one that you pick nine total wide receivers, three first team, three second team, three third team. I had Daz as first team, De'Ami Brown second team. I had Charlie Heck as one of the two first team tackles. I don't know if he'll get that or not. I do think he'll be mentioned on one of the three teams. Offensive line, by far the most difficult to vote for. I mean, do I know who the fifth best offensive guard is in the ACC? Probably not. So you really rely heavily on the information given to you. I've said that before. Jason Strobridge, I picked third team defensive tackle. I don't know if Stro will get on there or not. That was one of those where I felt like just because I knew more about it, I mean, I know the type of blocking that he faces. I know that other teams single him out. Other people may not know that from if they don't follow Carolina as closely. But I thought he deserved at least some kind of mention. And clearly I'm somebody who is going to be able to give him some kind of mention because I know the type of season that he's had, even if his numbers aren't enormous. So I had him on third team. I had Chess Rapp, first team linebacker. I think Isaiah Simmons is who I voted for defensive player of the year from Clemson. I had he, Surratt, and somebody else. Oh, Quarterman from Miami as the top three linebackers. And I think he's going to get it. He's tied for the ACC lead in tackles. He's in the top 10 in sacks and in tackles for loss. I think he's going to be first team. And I voted Mack Brown coach of the year. I don't think he's going to get it. My guess is Satterfield from Louisville probably will. But Mack Brown is going to get some consideration, and I think he should. So I voted Coach Brown coach of the year. Although I think Dabo Swinney, I mean, and we have this argument from the basketball side of things. If you vote for Dabo Swinney, that's a totally legitimate vote. Dude's undefeated. I think that's a legitimate vote. I think you could probably vote Bronco Mendenhall from Virginia, although I don't know. They were expected to be good, and some of this is, as we've said, what were you expected to be versus what you ended up being? I think Satterfield and Mack Brown are the two who filled the role of these teams haven't been very good. They came in and now they're better. I would think it would be one of those four that gets coach of the year, but we'll see.
I think if you were voting on what has the coach done with the 2019 team, maybe Dabo Swinney wins it because they haven't lost any football games. But if you're basing your vote on what has the coach done with the program, I think that one it would be tougher not to vote for Mack Brown because I think program-wise he's made the biggest strides. I'm very curious to see, does anyone leave Sam Howell off the list of quarterbacks? That to me is the biggest no-brainer from a Carolina perspective. Not necessarily that he should be first team, although I think you can make that argument, but he's got to be on the list. You cannot justify that he's not one of the three best quarterbacks in the ACC. You just can't. So I'm always fascinated to see that because inevitably it almost always happens. And I think the other part of what you said is just the Chas Surratt story. When we had him on the pod back in September, I wonder what he would have said if we would have said, Chas, we think you're pretty much going to be a no doubt lock first team all ACC player. I wonder what he would have thought.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that we would have thought that. But what a great year, and he's done everything.
Man, he had some standout plays against State, too.
He was all over the field.
Where you would see, and we talked about it after the play. I can't remember what play it was, but State handed off, and it looked like it was going to be a successful run for them in a big way. And all of a sudden, it was like, here comes Chad Surratt, and he tackles their running back. I think it was Knight for like 3 or 4 yards on a play where it looked like it could be 30 yards. And he's just got some of that stuff that you cannot teach.
Carolina doesn't go to a bowl this year.
No.
If
no
Chaz Surratt gets mad that he doesn't get to be the starting quarterback and goes to play somewhere else.
I agree 100%. So looking forward to those final results coming in. I do think Carolina will be represented decently this year. And so that's always exciting for those guys. Looking forward to when that stuff comes out here soon. Adam, before we get to your list or anything else, would you like to hear from our friends at HelloFresh?
I would.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Adam, do you have a list?
I do.
Let's go.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
We're going to start this list with former pod guest Wes Miller. Big win for Wes Miller and UNCG on Saturday. They won at Georgetown.
Oh, I didn't see that. Wow, what a great win.
I think it was a 4-point win. Patrick Ewing's the head coach at Georgetown now. So that's a road win for Wes Miller. I think UNCG is now 5-2. And as always, Wes doing a great job. Recommend that if you missed Wes's pod interview, you should go back and listen to that one. It was a good one.
That really was a good one. And it came after a disappointing football loss. And so our downloads on that one were a little lower than a traditional one, just because I think everybody was a little mad. But now that that anger has gone away, even if you just go back to listen to the interview, I would suggest it because it was really good.
We had gotten an email or a tweet from Kate Leslie a couple weeks ago that we weren't able to get to about Jake Lawler and what was happening with him. And because, of course, Jake was on the podcast along with Zach Goins. So Jake Lawler was part of Senior Day festivities against Mercer. And I just think it's cool how that's worked out. Because it's obvious he's getting to do what he wants to do. And a lot of times when you're 21 or 22 years old or however old Jake Lawler is, you don't, A, really know what you want to do, and B, you don't really have the confidence to say, you know what, this is what I like doing, and I'm going to go do it. He's going to go do it. He is not going to play football for the Tar Heels after this year, as you probably guessed when he was a part of Senior Day, and he's going to pursue what was totally obvious if you heard him on the pod. Again, if you didn't, you should go back and listen to it.
That was Pod 200.
A Roadhouse Challenge. How did you miss that one if you didn't hear it? He's going to pursue the passion that he has for movies and filmmaking, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say he is going to be successful.
A, credit to Jake for graduating early and putting himself in a position to go do this. You certainly wish nothing but the best for him in the future.
I hope he'll come back on the pod.
Yeah, when he's
with his Oscar.
Yeah, when he shows us all his awards.
Yeah.
But do you have a potty, Jake Lawler?
Yeah, keep working, buddy. I wanted to give a what up. To Dennis Powers, he sent a message, I think, to the pod. And said recently his job had relocated him to South Georgia, and the pod has kept him up and going on some long, dark nightly rides across this part of the state. So just wanted to say what up to Dennis Powers as you're driving across South Georgia there. Couple of good emails. Well, first off, we also want to salute Mr. Goosehonkers. That was a really good yet underrated tweet he had with the Bahamas postcard. Did you see that one?
Yes.
That was a really good tweet by Mr. Goosehonkers. I salute you, sir, or madam. A couple of emails that we got.
Well, Mr. Goosehonkers himself is a male. That's why it's Mr. Goosehonkers.
If you want to pick nits, I guess so. This was quite an email from Amanda Capabianchi, the originator of Storytime, the I Like Ed Coda Coda story.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But this is a different story.
Oh.
Amanda wrote us and said she wanted to give us her own what up for recognizing the True Blue fans for sticking around at the Mercer game. Amanda's own personal experience, she writes, wins me a permanent fan card. As about midway through the third quarter of the Mercer game, I, Amanda, slipped on some rainy pavement and took a hard landing, broke her tailbone, which she learned on Monday, and returned to her seats to cheer on the team for the rest of that rainy game.
Against Mercer.
Against Mercer. Amanda says she did not stick around to meet the team on the field after the game with her broken tailbone, but she was looking forward to a soft place to sit. Amanda, I salute you, ma'am.
No doubt.
That is impressive. I mean, we talked about how impressed we were with the fans who stayed till the end of the Mercer game. That was without knowing that one of them had broken her tailbone during the game and was like, brush it off. Put me back in. I'm ready. Let's go.
Yeah. Tape it up.
That was impressive.
By the way, we were corrected about the players meeting the fans on the field after the game. Can't remember who sent this in, but somebody told us that the Heels have done that the last couple years, that they've had guys come out and meet the team. So thank you for the correction, and what up to the Tar Heels for being fan-friendly.
Yes. James Wilson sent us an email. This is something you can look out for tomorrow at the Ohio State game, because we know you're going. Even if you break your tailbone, you're going to be in your seats at the Smith Center. James writes, we Carolina had stopped the Ric Flair flag waving promo for so long at basketball games. You know, when they play the song and the big flag comes out and goes to all four corners.
Oh yeah.
Now it's back.
Yeah.
Now, as you know, if you've listened to the pod, that particular timeout with the big flag used to be accompanied by what? The Blues Brothers.
I remember.
So every time when the big flag finishes and goes to midcourt, I sneak a little look over there in the tunnel to see if maybe those Blues Brothers are over there. So far, they're not.
I predict no.
What?
That's just, I don't have any inside info. It's just my prediction.
I'm still going to cast my eyes over there and just, I'm going to crane my neck.
What if Adam, you just put on the glasses and hat and ran out of your seat and started going on the court?
I know that technically you have things to do during these timeouts.
Well, you and Eric could do it. I'll give Eric a hat and some glasses.
That would be good.
And then it'd be hilarious because you're short and he's tall.
Could I jump off his back to complete the slam dunk?
I think he should pick you up like you would like an 8-year-old and let the 8-year-old dunk and you go, oh, and then he lets you go for a second while you're holding the rim. That's what I think should happen.
Congratulations to our friend Drew, better known as Hoops Magoops. He received his starter jacket in the mail.
Yeah.
His Carolina starter jacket. We hope we'll be able to see that at the Smith Center soon. More news on DaBaby front, Jones. And it's not all positive. I know you're surprised. Sean Steele sent us this message that he wanted us to be aware of because, of course, we need to know everything that's happening with DaBaby. He read this on a Facebook group post, and he thought of us.
Mm.
This isn't Sean talking. He read it on Facebook. My friend and I were waiting for DaBaby for about 3 to 4 hours in the cold, as you do.
Sure.
Finally, DaBaby arrives with a bunch of friends. We ask him to sign and for a photo, and one of the guys, his DJ, DJ Kid, of
yeah,
course,
right,
says we have to buy merch, hinting to a ski mask DaBaby had on. I said, I'll buy it if he can sign for us and I can get a photo. So DaBaby throws the ski mask at me and proceeds to sign our stuff and then walks away. I try to ask for a photo with the baby, and DJ Kid blocks me and says, "You have to Venmo me the money for the mask and the photo." He proceeds to type his Venmo in my phone, and I send him $75.
This all sounds on the up and up.
DJ Kid says, "I'll go get him now so you can take a photo with him. Wait here." They all went inside. I waited for about 30 minutes for DaBaby to come back out for the photo, but he never does. So all in all, I lost $75 from DaBaby's DJ, but I got the 11x14 signed picture and the ski mask, which reeks of something. And this person has attached the signed photo, the ski mask, the Venmo receipt, and the photo of him blocking me. The main thing you should take from that story is getting autographs in 2019 is a lot different than when I was waiting for Dave Hanners in 1990. Last thing on the list, several people, including director of Pond Security, Rusty, sent us the Hallmark Christmas movie story generator.
Yep.
Have you generated your own story, or do you prefer to do that on the silver screen?
Are you talking about the one that it says big city / career oriented / I love this because it's perfectly correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't done it yet, but really it's right. I love how at the end it says, and also the only old man in town might actually be the real Santa Claus.
Have you, did you watch any this weekend?
I was a little busy this weekend, Adam, so no, I have not watched any here recently.
I didn't know if since you weren't with the Tar Heels in the Bahamas, if you were just sitting around with your feet up and the Hallmark Channel on.
You know what we haven't properly discussed since we talked to Aaron Mattson and Karen Shelton? Me playing keeper for field hockey.
Aaron Mattson, clearly a great teammate, stop 5 out of 10.
Yeah. I wish... When we have cameras in here for the podcast gold episodes, you could have seen Karen Shelton's face of her like, "Oh Lord, no way."
She didn't think that you could stop.
She didn't even think the two that I suggested, she was even like,
She didn't think you could stop 5 out of 10 against 8-year-old Aaron Mattson.
Yeah, probably.
She's like, "I remember seeing young Aaron Jones. I don't think he had much of a shot."
That's pretty amazing that she knew Aaron Mattson was going to be good at 8. It's when you're good. that's what my recruiting skill tells me, Adam.
The only other thing I had, Jones, a vacation from life.
Oh.
This vacation from life took place on Paradise Island. Mm.
A vacation within a vacation.
I just want to set the scene. There really is no necessarily, point to this story. It's just the whole environment. So imagine, if you will, that you're in Paradise Island, Bahamas, and you choose to go to dinner with Big Grits. Now, Big Grits, of course, needs suitable transportation to be taken to dinner. So the Lucas family and the Grits family hop in the taxi of one Mr. Butterfield. But his friends, Jones, call him Butter.
Yeah. Like Kendall Marshall.
Yeah. But this Butter would be on the pod. So, for whatever reason, taxis in the Bahamas are designed to accommodate about 14 people. Which is like one Big Grits. So, we got the same cab to and from dinner. Going to dinner, Butter's minivan, but minivan... is smaller than what this was, like between a minivan and a cargo van. Butter had it set up so that he had the neon lights, he had the video screen, and he had the bumping tunes.
So it was kind of like that one I was in Tallahassee low many years ago.
Very similar. We got in, and Billie Jean by Michael Jackson was on the stereo, and Butter had some bass, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So we listened to the bumping tunes on the way there, but then the vacation from life came on the way back because this to me was what Big Grits is. The Grits and the Lucas families are piled into the Butter van. We're driving back to the team hotel. And as we pull into the driveway of the team hotel, on the video screen and on the bumping bass comes Old Town Road. And here comes Big Grits pulling up to the team hotel in the Butter van with the lights going, windows down, video on Old Town Road kicking it from the speakers.
Yeah.
And I just thought, this is what it's like to be Big Grits on a daily basis.
I got the horses in the back. Horse stock is attached. Head is matted black.
When you just, and I desperately wanted some Rams Club members to walk sort of out of the hotel right at that moment and see Big Grits emerging from the butter van. Down to the Old Town Road. And you know how people always are. Hey, there's Montross. And he's listening to Lil Nas X and Billy Ray Cyrus. It just...
In the Bahamas. In a van.
In the butter van with the lights going. You just... You can't replicate moments like that. That's what all these trips are about, Jones.
Yeah.
Listening to Old Town Road with Big Grits and butter and the Bahamas.
Adam, I would encourage you to be led by your dreams and to enjoy the journey. It's not about the end goal right now, Adam. It's about the trip there. With Lil Nas X playing as well. Man, Adam, this has been quite a pod.
Yeah.
Touched a lot of different topics today.
Yes, we have. It's been a broad-based pod.
Yep. Kind of like the Tar Heel athletic program, broad-based.
Yeah.
Kind of like, as well, our friends at LS Tractor. They're going to make short work of your outside chores and projects due to their broad-based awesomeness in the land, not just of tractors, Adam, but in yard maintenance and larger projects as well. LS Tractor has the machine for you. Visit lstractor.com, see the difference. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? Adam, we have second show of the week coming up later on. We'll talk about the Ohio State game, Carolina and the Buckeyes. We will preview Carolina and Virginia. What? Another ACC game coming up in Charlottesville Sunday for Carolina. We'll talk about that. Have a great guest and more. Adam, anything else?
Speaking of the great guests, did you see the suggestion we got to name the non-player coach potty in honor of James Sperling?
I did see that.
Something to think about.
The spur body.
The spotty.
The spotty. Spurlotty. We'll work on the name.
We've got time.
Okay. For now, we're going to let the RZA, along with some national champs, Karen Chilton and Aaron Mattson, get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
This is Karen Shelton here, and I want to say, see you later, Big Grits.
I'm Aaron Mattson, and see you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat.
See you later, Big Grits.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.